Welcome to this special edition of the Oncology Peer Review on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Fowler. As part of our OncView video series, Cancer Network spoke with Dr. Javier Munoz from the Mayo Clinic in Phoenix, Arizona, about updates and therapies of relapse refractory follicular lymphoma. Munoz touched on current treatment options, factors in choosing treatments, different third-line treatments, and more.
So, Dr. Munoz, how many patients relapse after frontline therapy?
Thank you for the invitation. My main interests are lymphoma, immunotherapy, and CAR T cells. I'm happy to share my experience. I appreciate your time joining us today. How many patients with follicular lymphoma relapse? Most of us consider the intention of therapy in follicular lymphoma to be palliative instead of curative, which would mean that most patients would eventually relapse. Certainly, there are exceptions to my previous comment. Patients with stage one follicular lymphoma can face long-term remissions after, let's say, radiation therapy, and some of those patients could potentially be considered cured as time goes by. Allogeneic stem cell transplant can provide a curative approach, but it is not necessarily for everyone, as the procedure is complex and carries morbidity and mortality. CAR T cells have been recently FDA approved for patients with follicular lymphoma that have received two or more lines of systemic therapy, but it is too early to make a comment regarding long-term remissions due to the relatively short follow-up that we have so far.
Okay, and how does relapse impact prognosis?
It certainly does. A short relapse post first-line therapy is more ominous prognostically compared to a patient that is facing relapse 10 years after first-line therapy. Dr. Casullo, in a very elegant fashion, showed that progression or relapse of follicular lymphoma within 2 years, so-called POD24, or progression of disease within 24 months after diagnosis, is associated with poor outcome. Now, to answer your question regarding relapse after frontline therapy, I will quote the RELEVANCE trial, which explored rituximab plus lenalidomide versus rituximab plus chemotherapy in advanced follicular lymphoma that was untreated. This was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2018. The interim 3-year rate of progression-free survival was 77% for rituximab plus lenalidomide and 78% for rituximab plus chemotherapy frontline. As time goes by, you will expect less patients to stay progression-free and more patients eventually relapse. As a summary, the timing of the relapse matters, and the choice of the initial therapy also matters, as they will factor in when it comes to our decision-making to choose a second-line therapy.
What are the treatment options at first relapse in follicular lymphoma?
One size does not fit all. The National Comprehensive Cancer Network guidelines mention multiple options for patients with follicular lymphoma in second line and subsequent therapy, including lenalidomide plus rituximab or lenalidomide plus obinutuzumab, the ECH2 inhibitor tazemetostat. There are also some chemotherapy options mentioned in the guidelines, like RCBP, bendamustine plus rituximab or obinutuzumab, or R-CHOP, which I personally try to avoid chemotherapy as much as possible. The only exception would be to use R-CHOP when there is histologic or suspected transformation from follicular lymphoma to diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. But short of that, I try to keep R-CHOP in my back pocket, not in my front pocket, sort of speak, when it comes to follicular lymphoma. The guidelines also mention PI3 kinase inhibitors as idelalisib, copanlisib, and duvelisib for patients with follicular lymphoma that have received previously 2 lines of systemic therapy. And there has been a recent addition to the armamentarium in the PI3 kinase family, as umbralisib has also been FDA approved for patients with follicular lymphoma that have received at least 3 prior lines of therapy when it comes to follicular lymphoma. Certainly having so many options is a good problem to have for patients with follicular lymphoma, and the future seems bright for this disease.
What factors do you consider when choosing treatment for the first relapse in relapse or refractory follicular lymphoma?
It is very important to bring all variables to the table, and these can be disease-specific or patient-specific. For example, the disease tempo. Was there POD24, or progression of disease within the initial 2 years from first-line therapy? Has there been evidence of histologic transformation, whether it is suspected or confirmed transformation? What was the first-line therapy previously used? Because you would not want to retreat the same with the same therapy or a regimen that is too similar to the first-line therapy that has already failed. Regarding patient-specific factors, you need to consider the patient age, fitness, or performance status, and other medical problems or comorbidities that may have an impact when it comes to your choice of therapy. It is not an easy decision to make, and treatment paradigms are always changing in this disease. How does treatment choice affect after first relapse would affect my treatment options in later lines? Mm-hmm. We do not only look at one variable, but many. Based on the results of the AUGMENT trial, a phase 3 trial that looked at lenalidomide plus rituximab versus placebo plus rituximab in relapse or refractory indolent lymphoma, many are currently prescribing lenalidomide plus rituximab in second line, let's say in a patient that had previously received chemotherapy plus rituximab front line. But again, it would be oversimplistic for me to sign a blank check recommendation for one particular therapy in second line for all patients. We look at all variables, both disease-specific and patient-specific, before making a therapeutic decision. We always welcome second opinions, and we learn from our colleagues from doing so. We always encourage patients to seek those second opinions, particularly when they're considering enrolling in clinical trials.
Okay, great. And so what clinical endpoints are most meaningful to you? For example, you know, progression-free survival or tumor reduction?
I personally always want to offer my patients a chance to live longer, which means that I'm always looking to choose therapies that provide proven improvements when it comes to overall survival. Mm-hmm. That said, follicular lymphoma is an indolent disease with a long-term horizon. Because of that, sometimes it is difficult to prove a survival advantage. Not only that, but we also have excellent therapies to salvage patients after relapse. We have previously discussed about a couple of trials, like the AUGMENT trial. Again, the AUGMENT trial was a phase 3 study of lenalidomide plus rituximab versus placebo plus rituximab in relapse or refractory indolent lymphoma. And the primary endpoint was progression-free survival. Of course, they looked at many other endpoints in a secondary fashion, but it's not uncommon to see PFS or progression-free survival as the main primary endpoint for many trials in follicular lymphoma. Finally, it is also possible that the primary endpoints in a particular study for the investigators or the sponsors are not necessarily aligned with the most important endpoints for patients, because in an optimal situation, patients would like disease control with good long-term outcomes without toxicity. Historically, this has been a trade-off with older chemotherapies, at least, as more toxic concoctions were used to give deeper and sometimes longer remissions. We're lucky to have nowadays novel agents available for patients with relapsed refractory follicular lymphoma that perhaps are not as toxic as older chemotherapy, or perhaps they have a different set of toxicity compared to older chemotherapies.
So Dr. Munoz, what are the treatments that are available for third line relapse refractory follicular lymphoma? And in particular, can you discuss the role of PI3K kinase inhibitors and kind of moreover what the treatment goals for the third line setting are?
Absolutely. If you go to the National Comprehensive Cancer Network guidelines for follicular lymphoma, you will find multiple options for third line and subsequent therapy for this disease, including PI3 kinase inhibitors, including the ECH2 inhibitor that we have briefly mentioned, tazemetostat, and even going all the way to finding CAR T cells, AXI, Captagene, Silolucel as an option for these patients. When it comes to PI3 kinase inhibitors, you have copanlisib, duvelisib, and idelalisib for patients that are facing follicular lymphoma relapse refractory after 2 prior therapies. And also we have nowadays umbralisib for patients that have follicular lymphoma relapse or refractory after 3 prior lines of therapy. The wording for the EZH2 inhibitor tazemetostat is as follows. If you have an EZH2 mutation and you have relapse or refractory disease after two prior therapies, then you're a candidate for this particular medication. Also, if you have EZH2 wild type or unknown status relapse refractory disease in patients that do not have satisfactory alternative options. So bottom line, when it comes to tazemetostat, this EZH2 inhibitor, you have a potential pathway to use this medication, whether or not the EZH2 mutation is present. And I also mentioned the possibility of axicabtagene citoleucel or the anti-CD19 CAR T-cell therapy, which is currently FDA approved only for patients that have received two or more lines of systemic therapy with follicular lymphoma. Of course, it has other indications, but I'm going to try to zero in on follicular lymphoma at this point. You were asking me about goals of therapy, and again, one size does not fit all. The goals for these patients may not be the same. CAR T cells would be a very complex process that, again, may not be for every patient in the way that, similar to transplant, you need a very solid caregiver. You need to live very close to a facility or stay in proximity to a facility that prescribes CAR T cells for safety. We want to make sure that we monitor toxicity during or post CAR T cells. And because of that, the goals for patients that choose PI3 kinase inhibitors or an EZH2 inhibitor may not be the same as patients that go all the way to consider transplant as a therapeutic maneuver or CAR T cells as one of the options when it comes to their journey in this disease.
Okay, so next I wanted to review the recent approval of tazemetostat. Can you discuss the MOA of the drug in the treatment of relapsed and refractory follicular lymphoma?
Activating mutations of EZH2, which is an epigenetic regulator, occur approximately in 20% of patients with follicular lymphoma. High-level discussion, EZH2 is a regulator that controls the fate of cells, probably not only when it comes to gain of function mutations, probably it also has some indirect effects as well. And that is probably why we can see responses in patients with EZH2 wild type. Now, if you want to go deeper, the EZH2 gene provides instructions for making a type of enzyme called the histone methyltransferase. Histone methyltransferases modify proteins called histones, which, as you know, are structural proteins that attach or bind to the DNA and give chromosomes their shape, almost like a rosary. By adding a molecule called a methyl group to the histones, a process called methylation again, the histone methyltransferases can turn off or suppress the activity of certain genes. By turning off particular genes, this complex is involved in the process that ultimately determines the type of cell an immature cell will ultimately become. And that is why we said that it's involved in cell fate determination. Why is this relevant? Tazemetostat is the first in class. It's a first in class EZH2 inhibitor, already FDA approved, published in Lancet Oncology, so this is a testament to the work of the investigators involved, that is an oral therapy with activity both in patients with EZH2 mutated and EZH2 wild type. Hence, it has been a welcoming addition to our armamentarium when it comes to follicular lymphoma.
There was a trial, a phase 2 trial, recently published in Lancet Oncology. Can you review the study design and the safety and results?
This study was an open label single-arm phase 2 trial performed at multiple hospitals in different countries, including USA. Eligible patients were adults that had confirmed follicular lymphoma, either grade 1, 2, 3A, or 3B. They had relapsed or refractory disease after two or more systemic lines of therapy. They needed to have good performance status, 0 to 2, and they needed to have enough tissue for central testing when it comes to EZH2 mutation status. Subsequently, patients were categorized by EZH2 status. You could be EZH2 mutated or mutant or wild type EZH2. All patients received 800 milligrams of tazemetostat orally twice per day in a continuous fashion over 28 days. So each cycle was 28 days. The primary endpoint for this particular study was objective response rate.
And can you talk about the efficacy in patients with and without the EZH2 mutation and in the wild type population?
So this clinical trial, again, published in Lancet Oncology in October 2020, slightly behind the actual FDA approval of tazemetostat for follicular lymphoma in June 2020. Regarding efficacy, it showed, looking at the primary endpoint of PFS, it was 13.8 months in the EZH2 mutant cohort and 11.1 months in the EZH2 wild type cohort. Regarding toxicity, grade 3 or higher events were uncommon. When it comes to thrombocytopenia, it was 3%, neutropenia, grade 3 or higher, 3%, and 2% when it comes to anemia. There were no treatment-related deaths. So as a summary, what are the implications of this approval in the treatment of follicular lymphoma? You have a new option that is an oral option, it's a non-chemotherapy agent that has luckily small levels of severe grade 3 or higher toxicity and has reasonable efficacy when it comes to the primary endpoint of the study, progression-free survival in this case.
So Dr. Munoz, how has sequencing of therapy changed over the last year? Like in particular, where does TAS fit into your treatment plan? And then moreover, how does the availability of new therapies affect your sequencing?
Well, relapsed follicular lymphoma typically responds to additional therapy. The duration of remission usually becomes shorter with each subsequent therapy. As we have acquired more tools in the tool belt, the sequencing of therapies also becomes more challenging. Most patients with follicular lymphoma experience multiple relapses and will be treated with many of the currently available agents at some point during their journey. So it is not necessarily a question of if, but rather a question of when. A preferred therapeutic paradigm has not been established, and it depends on patient characteristics and disease characteristics. There are some treatments that are intravenous and some are oral, as you know. My personal bias is to avoid chemotherapy regimens as much as possible. Even more so during this COVID-19 pandemic, I have tried very hard to favor oral novel agents instead of prescribing IV intravenous chemotherapies, trying to keep the patients at home as much as possible. So I'm very happy to have oral therapies available, particularly as my treatment focuses on symptom control and improvement of quality of life instead of other endpoints. Regarding tazemetostat, I use it per label. So that would be for patients with EZH2 mutation with relapsed refractory disease after two or more lines of systemic therapy, or for EZH2 wild type or unknown with relapsed refractory disease in patients that do not have satisfactory alternative options. While testing for EZH2 mutations can identify patients who are more likely to respond to the EZH2 inhibitor, responses have also been seen in patients without EZH2 mutations. For patients that can tolerate the expected toxicity from CAR T cells and who have faced short remissions, short duration of remissions, for example, POD24, I do consider CAR T cells as a viable option. For most other patients, I choose one of the novel agents that are currently FDA approved in third line or later. And of course, I always consider enrolling a patient in a clinical trial if such option is available.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available. Or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast is the official podcast of Cancer Network, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer Network. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again next time.